if the apology or
Thank you, Chair. We'll receive the apology from Mr. Kasim. He'll join us later in the meeting. We also receive apologies from Mr. Mahoma Bilu and Professor Msimang, as well as the Minister. Thank you, Chair.
That's apologies. The remainder of the agenda, honourable members, today is the second quarter performance of the department as well as the adjustment budget. We have also, been requested by the committee, we also have members of the audit committee here, and they will be introduced. I think it's on that side. Thank you very much for coming. In our deliberations, honourable members, we must take that into consideration. To put questions to the audit committee also. Honourable members, there are just some minutes that we will have to attend to, and that is the agenda I put to yourself. Agreed? Thank you very much. May I hand over, we've heard the apology from the minister, but the deputy minister is here. May I allow the Deputy Minister to proceed, and then honourable members, under apologies I should have said this, the Deputy Minister will then go next door back to the Cabinet to go and present other matters of education to the Cabinet Committee. With your permission, honourable members, let's start with the Deputy Minister, and then DG, you will take us from there.
No, thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, and thank you indeed for inviting the Department to present second quarter performance report against the annual performance plan tabled earlier this year. Now, we do acknowledge, Chair, that it is mandatory for all government departments to produce quarterly reports on their performance in respect to their finances and non-financial information. For us, we always see this engagement as an opportunity not only to account but also to share with you the good work that the department continues to do. Our focus, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, will really be on the goals we have set ourselves for the 5 years leading to 2019-2020 financial year, and that we are still on course towards ensuring that the PSET system is driven by a sound legislative framework, appropriate teaching and learning support, infrastructure development, as well as a strong stakeholder network. We are steadily making progress on these goals, Honourable Chair, and the team from the department will give a clear outline of how we are going about doing this. Indeed, the current challenges, Chair, facing the PSET system, it is not going to be easy for the remainder of the period covered by the strategic plan, but we are quite thankful for the consistent support of the Portfolio Committee and of the members from the different political parties as we forge ahead with implementing the department's strategic plan. There were specific delivery outputs during the quarter under review, and 83% of those have been achieved as planned, Chair. The DG of the department and senior management of, are here, and they will present the details of these achievements. Now, with your permission, Chair, may I now hand over to the Director General, so that he introduces the team and they take us through the presentation. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. DJ.
Thank you very much, Chair, our Deputy Minister, Honorable Members, the Chair of the Audit Committee in the Department, Dr. Van der Nest, my colleague from the Department and everybody in the House. We stand here to present the annual performance report, the second quarter performance report of the Department of Higher Education and Training. As you may be aware that we have already accounted for the first quarter in respect to the annual performance plan of the department. The presentation outlines really just the standard issues, but we also included the status in respect to the first quarter insofar as the targets that were not achieved there, so that we don't lose anything as we move forward. And the performance in respect to the six programs of the department, including budget performance. But the other important area this time around is in respect to the actions of 2015-16 audit outcome as to what are we doing to address those issues that were identified in the audit outcome that even the audit committee has appraised itself with. By the way of background, on the third slide, for the 2016-17 financial year, we have 38 performance indicators encompassing 70 targets. For the first quarter, which is currently under review, the department plans to deliver 12 key targets through its core delivery program, six of them. Support programs, that is in respect to both planning as well as corporate services, had no target due to this quarter, as it will be indicated when we are getting defined the presentation. So what we have done in respect to these programs will only report progress towards the attainment of the annual target as set out. So the presentation as it stands has been structured to begin with core delivery programs, and that we are doing it according to the request of the portfolio committee that it would require to spend more time in deliberating on the core delivery programs, that is universities, TVET colleges, as well as community education and training colleges. Not to say they won't be engaging in other programs, but the sequencing has been requested to be in this fashion. Now, of the 12 delivery targets we had for the second quarter, we've managed to achieve 10 targets out of 12, which amounts to 83%. So the details will be presented below. Now, in respect to quarter one status check, the two targets were within the skills branch. Straight test pass rate at Indlela, which was below the target of 50%, which was at 50% instead of 52% as a target. We've undertaken a lot of work in trying to address the challenges we're experiencing in respect to this. We have developed as a department a comprehensive strategy that we have been consulting on with various stakeholders, including the private sector, as well as all provinces in the country with a view of coming up with actionable plans to address this area. And this exercise will be culminating into a conference that will be taking place on the 6th and 7th of December with a view that would come out of that conference taking into consideration also the issues that are raised as to how we can improve and escalate in this area through the consultative engagements that we had. The other area is the average lead time from trade test application received until trade test conducted at Indlela is 160 days instead of the planned 120 days. So there is quite an improvement in respect to that. Now, some targets have remained unchanged. So the average lead time from trade test application received until trade test conducted has improved quite tremendously from 160 days to 124 days. But in respect to this, Mr. Mvalo will elaborate, you know, later when we're engaging with the overall presentation, which Mr. Mgiwa will be taking us through. With your permission, Chair, I will ask Mr. Mgiwa, who is the director responsible for this work in the department, to take us through.
Thank you very much, DG. Please do that, but can you give us highlights maybe so that we have sufficient time for the members to engage in the report?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. We will start with program 3, and basically the presentation will move from the core branches to the support branches, being program 2 and program 1. But in respect to program 3, which is slide number 6, just to remind members that this program's aim, purpose, is to develop and coordinate policy and the regulatory frameworks for an effective and efficient university education system, and also to provide financial support to universities, NSFAS, and the National Institute for Higher Education. Now, for the financial year 2016-17, there are about 29 delivery outputs. But for this particular quarter that is under review, there were 5 outputs that were due at the end of September 2016. All the 5 outputs were achieved as planned, and these are the higher education HIV and AIDS program, the report thereof in respect to the 2015-16 financial year, which was approved by the DG, and the teaching and learning development capacity improvement program project plan, which covers early childhood development, teacher education, primary teacher education, TVET and community college lecturer education, as well as the special needs teacher education. All those were approved for implementation by DG as at the end of September. Going forward, these will be now implemented and monitored and reported in the subsequent quarters. Now, the branch also is tracking progress towards the achievement of delivered outputs for the remainder of the financial year, beginning with the third and the fourth quarter. There are no challenges. There's smooth progress in the implementation. However, we want to report that there is just one deliverable pertaining to the revision to the funding framework of higher education institutions, which is supposed to be published in the Government Gazette by end December 2016. Processes have unfolded post the CR stage with the social impact assessment system. However, the current status is that the framework has been submitted to Cabinet for processing. Now, we're not sure if it's going to be finalized as planned by 30 December. In respect to Program 4, Chair, the purpose is to plan, develop, implement, monitor, maintain, and evaluate national policy programs, assessment practices, and systems for TVET sector. And in respect to that, there are about 11 outputs for the financial year, which are meant to be delivered in the, from this quarter that we are reviewing up until the fourth quarter. Now, there were three targets in this quarter, namely the monitoring and evaluation report in respect to the performance of TVET colleges, the intervention that the department is making in respect to teaching and learning support, as well as student support services. All these interventions have been undertaken and approved by the DG. From the third quarter going forward, these will be implemented and monitored and checked if the impact thereof is being realized. Also, the program has output that are not in the second quarter but are being monitored, and the progress is also satisfactory because there are no challenges that are experienced. So we will report in respect to those in the third and fourth quarter. However, there are two critical policies that are currently being developed, which we would want to say that there's a bit of a risk of not achieving, and we want to upfront alert the portfolio committee, and that relates to the National Admission and Promotion Guidelines for NCV, which is currently being reviewed by UMALUSI. And the link to that is the review of the examination conduct policy, which is also dependent on the finalization of the review of the NCV qualification, which is undertaken by UMALUSI. Now, because of the linkages, this deliverable may not be achieved for as long as the processes within UMALUSI are still unfolding. But we want to indicate that these are processes that are being followed up by the department, and where there are glitches in terms of process, they will be looked into in the last quarter of the financial year. In terms of Program 6, Chair, similarly, it's a program that plans and develops regulatory frameworks for the CET colleges, but also the program assessment practices and the system in general. And for the year ending March 2017, there are about 7 delivered outputs in respect to the purpose. And for this quarter under review, there was one deliverable which was due by end of September, which is a monitoring evaluation policy for community colleges. This policy was approved by the Minister on the 28th of September 2016 as planned, and it's being implemented. The process on other targets due in the subsequent quarters in relation to those targets is unfolding. One, there is a target in respect to regulations for the establishment of the satellite community learning centers, which is due by end of December. We're currently having a draft on the regulations that has been developed, and it awaits approval. The national curriculum policy for community colleges, which is due by the end of the financial year. The status is that the draft policy has been developed and it awaits approval. Lastly, the third one is the conduct policy for general education and training certificate for adults, which is also due by end of the financial year. There is a draft which is also awaiting approval. Annual plan for education, training and development improvement plan. This is the intervention that the department is making in respect to CET colleges in relation to teaching and learning. There is a draft framework which is being processed currently. This deliverable is due by end of the financial year. An approved CET college infrastructure maintenance report thereof is also due end March 2017. We have received multiple reports in respect to the CET colleges and are being consolidated and discussed internally before recommendations are approved. Lastly, an approved strategy on strategic partnerships, which is due 31 March 2017. There's a draft strategy that has been developed and is at a consultation stage internally. In respect to Program 5, it is the program that is responsible for artisan development. For the quarter under review, there were three delivery targets, and one of those was achieved as planned, which is the oversight monitoring report in respect to CETA performance, which was approved by the DG. However, as DG indicated earlier on, the other two targets which were not achieved in the first quarter in relation to the test pass rate at Indlela has not been achieved still in this quarter. The average lead time from trade test application received until trade test is concluded at Indlela, we have moved a bit as DG indicated. We're moving closer to the average of 120 days to process the applications. Now, the other targets that are in the subsequent quarters relate to the approval of the workplace-based learning program regulations, which is to be approved by the minister by end of December. We currently are having a draft regulations in place and are under discussion. The approval of the revised National Skills Development Strategy by the minister is also due by end of the financial year. Currently, consultations with stakeholders are being finalized following the gazette of the proposal for the new National Skills Development Strategy and the CETA landscape in November last year. Chair, you will also recall, and the committee will also recall, that these are the direct deliverables so far that we have presented that relates to all the steering mechanisms and the support interventions that the department is making to the system. But we also said in the APP that we will monitor the performance of the system in relation to student enrollment, headcount enrollment at TVET colleges, and other system indicators. Now, in the main, the performance in relation to universities will be reported in the third quarter. But for this quarter under review, there are three key performance indicators that were tracked in relation to sub-outcome 2, which is to increase access and success in programs leading to intermediate and high-level learning, and that relates to the lead time to issue certificates to qualifying candidates within the TVET colleges. Our target there is to issue certificates within 3 months. There are currently challenges, as members would note, and these are the challenges that were previously shared with the committee that relates to the capacity of CETA to address data processing errors in relation to the issuing of certificates. The interventions from the department, from the side of the department, are such that constant engagement with CETA are being made with a view of dealing with the errors in relation to the processing of data and the capacity within CETA. Lastly, the other system indicators that were tracked during the court under review relates to sub-outcome 4, which relates to artisan development. We have a target of having artisans qualified per annum to the amount of 21,110 for the year. Progress to date in relation to that, it's 7,367 artisans qualified. In relation to the registration of artisans, the target for the year is 30,250, and we almost half of the annual target at 14,772. Lastly, Chair, I will just brush over the support programs, Program 2, as well as Program 1. Suffice to say that in relation to Program 2, there are 9 annual targets for the year, but for this particular quarter, there were no targets that were due, but it suffices to indicate that the targets that are due in the subsequent quarters are being processed, and all the 9 are on track in terms of the due date, which is 31 March 2017. In relation to Program 1, Chair, also there are no targets that are due for the quarter under review. However, there are 5 targets for the year which are being tracked per quarter, one being the filling of positions, funded positions, whose target is 90%, and we're currently sitting at 92.5%, which translates to a vacancy rate of 7.45%. The resolution of disciplinary cases within 90 days. For the quarter under review, we received 20 disciplinary cases, some of which spilled over from the first quarter, and of the 20, 25%, which is 4, were resolved within 90 days. The average lead time from recruitment requisition received until appointment recommendation is made, the target day is 180 days, and we're currently sitting at 187 days. And the challenge there is that we're receiving high volumes of applications, and due to the capacity constraints to process those within time, we are unable to reach the 180 days. But looking at the current average lead time of 187, we're comfortable that come end of the financial year, we may be at 180 days. In respect to creditor payment age, we just below the required 30 days at 29.4 days to settle valid invoices. We will keep on tracking the processing of invoices for the remainder of the financial year, and try to maintain the 29.4% or less. Lastly, the approved ICT procurement plan which is being processed. It's due at the end of the financial year. The processes have been undertaken. We currently have a draft and it's awaiting approval. Thank you, Chairperson. I think the slides beginning, I mean from the slide 1 relates to finance. And through DG, I will hand over to the CFO. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson and members of the committee. On the first slide, just a very short summary, the overall spending for the second quarter is 39.1%, and that brings the total for the first 6 months to 60.8%, which will be later on reflected on the various tables. The high spending rate, if one considers only 6 months of the year, and we're already above 60%, is mainly due to the transfers that's made to universities and TVET colleges, which is not spread on a monthly basis. Operational activities are closer to the average of 50 that one would expect, including compensation of employees, and that is was at the end of September at 47.5%. Compensation of employees on itself was 47%, and if we look at the next slide, we see the breakdown of compensation of employees in two parts. Firstly, the normal personnel expenditure, which is at 46.3% at that stage, and examiners and moderators, the exam services payments, which was already at 112.5%, showing you the total of 47%. If we go to the next slide, just a short summary of up to the end of the second quarter, the position of the department. Transfer payments as well as the subsidies were processed as planned, and it was in accordance with the approved payment schedules. Expenditure trends are very closely monitored by the department. To prevent the risk of overexpenditure, you know, overspending in total, obviously would result in unauthorized expenditure at the end of the financial year, and we are very carefully monitoring expenditure, especially within the limited resources that we have for normal operational expenditure. Cost savings measures were implemented. Cost saving measures were implemented during 2014-15. Those are still in place. And since the second quarter, National Treasury issued two new cost measure instructions that were effective from 1 November, and those were in the meantime also implemented by the department. Data regarding the status of each program and the spending on each program and the economic classifications are reflected in the next slide. The highest spending you will see is under program 1 and then also under program 3. Now the program 1 position is that there were incorrect parcel interfaces that happened within the department. And accordingly, some of the salary payments for Program 4 were directed by PASOL to Program 1 and not to Program 4. Those have in the meantime been corrected during October 2016. We agreed to reflect the actual position as at the end of September. Should you receive expenditure data from National Treasury, it will also show that high spending for Program 1, so to prevent any confusion in that respect. Program 3, as we explained previously, the high spending on Program 3 because of the uneven subsidy payments to universities as well as to NSFAS. So you will also see when we look at the distribution of expenditure on economic classification that transfer payments would comprise the highest spending of the various economic classification items. At this stage, we can report that no irregular, fruitless or wasteful expenditure have been reported, and unauthorized expenditure will be applicable at the end of the year as it relates to the overspending on programs as well as on the boat as a whole. If you look at the next slide, you can see the spending pattern for the various programs. And as indicated, program 1, which shows very high spending, but that has been corrected in the meantime. And then program 3, Elsa has explained, that's already on 73%. Program 4 is relatively high at 47%, but that is due to the subsidy payments to the Tibet colleges. In total, as indicated, up to the end of September, the total spending is at 60.81%. You will note that direct charges, the CETAFs and the NSF skills levy, is only at 40.41%. When we talk about the adjusted estimates, I will explain that further. On the next slide, we see the spending on economic classifications. And there you can see the distribution compensation of employees, the goods and services spending, which is relatively on par, transfer payments very high, but there you can very clearly see that universities at 73.2% and the transfer to NSFAS already at 73.5%. In terms of the subsidies to Tibet colleges, the total percentage there, 50.7. The next slide gives us an indication of the adjusted estimates, specifically as requested, Chair, for 2016-17. Now, if you look at the original allocation of the department, it was 66.8 billion. Then what was included in the 66.8 billion was the 17.6 billion for direct charges, which is the skills levy. We have a reduction in the adjusted estimates. The 66.8 billion reduced to 64.65 billion. And when we report on the third quarter, certainly we will then report on the 64.65 billion. Now, if you look at the reason for the reduction on the next slide, the total decline is 2.177 billion, and that is as a result of the downward estimate of National Treasury in terms of the collection of the skills levy. So, as I indicated, you would have noticed that the skills levy transfers to date only, or as at the end of September, only 40%, and that is because of a lower than expected collection of the skills levy, and therefore National Treasury made a downward adjustment based on the current collection data, and the skills levy is therefore reduced with 12%. On the next slide, two other aspects that come out of the adjusted estimates. First of all, in terms of environments, there were a number of internal shifting of funds. The net effect was zero. We shifted funds internally between programs to address specific operational needs as we progressed during the financial year and to prevent certain shortfalls, especially in terms of cost of living adjustments. Now, the reason for that is that we do not always receive the full allocation for the cost of living adjustments or the full impact thereof from National Treasury, and the department is also required where we have shortfalls to fund that within existing allocations, and therefore we do shifts between programs to ensure that personnel expenditure for all the various programs are sufficiently provided. In terms of the shifting of funds for the Tibet colleges, there is a shift that took place between compensation of employees in Tibet colleges towards subsidy transfers. A total amount of 260 million rand is applicable. This is as a result of, if the committee can remember last year at the end when we did the annual report, we reported on the saving on compensation of employees for TVET colleges. The amount originally earmarked for TVET colleges was 81% of the total appropriation. And there was an uncertainty on the side of the department of the actual impact on the function shift. And we had to ensure that we make sufficient provision for compensation of employees. Now, during 2015-16, we realized at the outcome of that financial year that the amount set aside was more than what we projected, and as a result, we shifted now in the adjusted estimates already to prevent the same situation, 260 million, two subsidies, so that 260 million is added to the subsidies of the TVET colleges and will not be required for compensation of employees. On the next slide, Chair, we were requested just to indicate the progress on the audit outcome of 2015-16. And we can report that action plans were developed by all the branches to address the audit findings for 2015-16. There were workshops held by the Auditor General with each branch separately to discuss the 2015-16 audit, to look at the audit methodology for 2016-17, to look at specific audit focus areas, timelines, as well as the audit action plans for 2015-16. Based on those discussions, the Auditor General will also submit to the department and to each branch comments on the various action plans and where they deem it necessary to indicate whether they would want various branches to address matters differently so that we can consider those and incorporate those into the plans. Those comments are expected by the end of the month and we will then incorporate it into the plans. As from 14 November 2016, which was last week, branches are required to provide weekly reports on their action plans, so that it can be carefully monitored, and it will also be a standing item on the agenda of senior management. The audit committee already also met the department and the branches to discuss the audit action plans. On the next slide, that is a summary of the audit action plans. Obviously, it's a very detailed document, and we are willing to provide that to the committee if it is required. In total, there are 83 different actions to be taken across the department, and of those, 22 of the actions have already been completed. 61 actions are in process, and I must also there emphasize that if one looks specifically at finance, SEM, and partially also some of those under human resource management, some of those actions are applicable to the compilation of the financial statements. So some of those will only be actually performed during March, April, May next year, but we keep them on the radar so that we don't forget about them. Of the total 83 findings for which actions are required, 38 of those were repeat findings from 2014-15, and they are also receiving specific attention at this point in time. You will note, Chair, that under the branches, the Community Education and Training branch do not reflect there. In terms of that branch, a separate action plan has been compiled. That plan looks at bigger institutional capacity because of the fact that it is a new branch, and it will be implemented over a three-year period, and there's also detailed discussions with the IG to look at those actions and to ensure that they take place. Chair, I think that concludes the finance part and the full presentation, so I gladly hand back to the DG. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Anything further, Deputy Minister? You are fine now. Honourable Members, thank you very much, Deputy Minister, DG, CFO, everyone else that made the presentation. Honourable Members, it's over to yourselves. The second quarter report, the adjustment, and the audit. I remind you that members of the Audit Committee is here, and we may put questions to them also. Honourable Bazoli Zain is up, and Honourable Nkadimen Zain is up, Honourable Kekana, Honourable Kilian, Honourable Mbata, and I end up with Honourable Mutuma.
Thank you, Chair. thank you for your report. So, recently 7 reports on the state of play in higher education were put on the Treasury website. On TVET, on universities, on the general costs of higher education, and in there were some interesting audit findings which were more detailed than the audit findings we normally get. So I was just wanting to ask the department whether you will be considering those reports, if so, when, and whether you will be showing them to us or reporting on them to us. The second one is the TVET audit outcomes looked really seriously bad. Of the 30 under your financial administration, under the Public Finance Management Act, it looks like I think about 10 were either adverse or very seriously qualified with findings. So I'd just like a little bit more detail on that. I see here up there you had 10 planned for TVET audit action. Is that the same 10, and what are the plans? Then the $2 billion reduction in the skills levy is quite startling. That's a huge percentage reduction from what it was at $14 billion to $12 billion or something. It's a huge amount of money reduction. How is that to be explained, and what is the effect of that on the TVET for the year, I mean on the CETAs and other things that are being funded by the skills levy? There was one transfer which just puzzled me, which was to households, a household's budget, which sounded like, you know, somebody was getting it to help them buy a fridge or something. So I just need to know what a household's budget is. I presume it's your household, but if you could just clarify that. And then, given that this is the second quarter and therefore all the money, in a way, budgeted to you was finally in your coffers, how did the transfers to NSFAS and the universities take place? That extra money that was budgeted earlier this year to help with student shortfalls, some of it was to go to the universities and some of it was to go to NSFAS to help pay student debt. Now, when exactly was that money transferred? Because we heard rumors from students that really it hadn't come in yet, and the universities were saying to them, you know, the money's not here, therefore we can't help you with your debt repayment. So we just need some clarity as to when exactly all that extra money was transferred to the universities to help them with a fee shortfall, A, and B, to NSFAS to help with additional funding for students. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for all the presentations from the department. On slide number 29, under administration, you are reporting a vacancy rate of 7.45%, And you also mentioned the challenge of high volume of applications received because of the lack of capacity in the recruitment unit to respond to the demand. And my question is, the department has been aware of this capacity constraints within the recruitment unit in the previous and also in the current financial year. What mechanism has been put in place to ensure filling of vacant posts within the set time frame? Number two is the issue under skills development. During our oversight at Indlela, it was reported that there was a high vacancy rate of trade test assessors and few workshops in high demand trades, which leads to longer average lead time for trade test application received until trade test conducted. What is the progress in filling of those vacancies for the assessors? And what plans are there in place to develop new generation of artisans, trainers, and assessors? Again, the target of 52% trade test pass rate at Indlela was 2% below the target in the first quarter of the current financial year. What mechanisms were put in place to ensure that the target is met in the subsequent quarters? Three, the department informed the committee that there was a decline in the number of trade test assessments conducted at the institute. This was due to a large number of privacy-owned trade test centers accredited by the CITAS. My question is whether the decline in this trade test assessment could be attributed to better service and short turnaround time and privately owned trade test centers. The last question is under the finances. The department has appointed service providers, the SABCs and chartered accountants, to manage the funding on behalf of the entity. Is this in line with the PFMA? Why is the department hiring or outsourcing this service? Why is it not capacitating its own people in order to save the funds? Thank you, Chairperson.
The mic is on.
Chair, the first question is on the figures that I thought I understood, but I realize I still don't understand. The 7,000 artisan production, the 21,000 700 artisan production that comes out of the report, and this is against the target of 30,000 that we say by 2030 we should be producing each year. Now, for me this point is very serious to understand, because remember that the pressures that are there at university with student enrollment could be relieved if our TVET colleges operate efficiently, because that is where we're hoping to absorb a lot of students. Actually, a lot of students, because of the high dropout rate at university, might not need to go there because they are supposed to belong to another sector of education. But because now in our community, university seems to be, I don't know whether it is because of the way we are socialized, to be the only thing. Even those that want to do practical, just interested in
hands on kind of occupations end up at university. And as a result, we have a very high, as one factor, dropout rate. So I think as soon as we get TVETs operating well, it will release, as you know, a lot of pressure that we're facing at university. Now, second quarter, if you say 7,000 students were produced, and you also say 21,700, I don't know in the second quarter actually how many did we produce, because I'm measuring that against the 30,000 that we should ultimately produce by 2030 and see if we're moving in the right direction. That's the first question. The second question, with the figures and the finances that we've seen on TVETs again, when we went to do oversight in Soweto, Yonomulapo Technical College, which is the biggest in Soweto with about 5 satellites, you know what the situation was then. Now, in the total scheme of things, especially this budget as it stands, will things improve there? Because students were complaining about curriculum, teachers were complaining. Actually, we just had a big load of unions there in the house all over the show. But you could just read that the principal is under serious, serious pressure. And things are not well because everybody was just tense there. And the tension extended to our own chest. So what I want to know, what remedy or attempt to remedy the situation are we bringing forth? Let me stop there.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. I want to thank the department for their presentation. And some of the issues have been raised by my colleagues, but I just want to make just one remark, Chairperson, before I go into the questions. First of all, we know that the department is running a very tight ship, and we therefore commend them for keeping a very close eye on expenditure patterns, etc. But obviously, from our side, we have the responsibility to see that things actually change in the sector. So if we make some comments, please see it in that light, that we want to further encourage the department. And in fact, Chairperson, I think it's important for the department to be completely open with us and to tell us about the challenges. So my very first question relates to the skills levy. Just a question, I understand what has been said here, that because of lower income into the fiscus, obviously there's been lower skills levies received, etc., from companies, and consequently there's a reduction. Just a question, is it the best way to reflect this, or is it just a matter of Treasury is doing it this way and the department accepts it? Just clarity about that. And precisely because of the issue mentioned by Honourable Zoli, and that is how it relates, how it effectively impacts on CETAs and their programs. Going forward, is there a different way to do it? Then, secondly, Chair, just want to look at slide 32, and that is the issue of percentage spent on examiners and moderators. It is quite high. Is there any indication that this could pose a problem going forward? Because if we currently, after two quarters, stand on 112.5%, how do we manage the process? We still have
I suppose, some additional exams that lay ahead. So please, if we could have an indication, or is this final and we won't have further expenditure? Chairperson, then I want to go to slide 29, and this is where I want to talk about capacity. If we look at the department's administration budget, Program 1, we see that there is a vacancy rate of 7.45% and that there is an average period that it takes to fill vacancies, etc. My question is, do we have the right skills in the department? Is this a warm body constraint, or is it the level of skill that is in the department, specifically in specific positions, that is posing a problem? And secondly, could it be relayed to inadequate funding of the system? If we could just have a clarity about that. Chairperson, if we look at the deliverables, and I first just wanted to make look at the direct deliverables, a few slides. And again, I want to pose the question, Honourable Nkari Mend asked questions about Ndlela, but I want to ask, do we have the right managerial and professional capacity in Ndlela? Do we have the ability to change that institution around? Or is there a problem? Is that one of the challenges? Yes, we see that there is an improvement, but we are quite far off in terms of trade tests. 120 days, 160 days instead of the planned 120 days, it's still quite far off. Then, a general feeling, Chairperson, and I understand that it relates to direct deliverables, and you know, it's part of the department to work on policy development, etc., etc. But if I go through the slides 7 and 8, and I go through slides 11 and even some of the others, I've just marked completion of a project plan, a project plan, a project plan, slides 7 and 8. It is said that there are no challenges on page 9 as far as university education is concerned, but then we see on program 4 with TVET, we again see a report on TVET colleges was approved, plans for TVET colleges was approved, support services plan was approved, etc. Now, is it, and I understand that we get feedback on the performance plan, but is it a tick box exercise, or is there funding for the implementation of these plans? Are there any challenges as far as that is concerned? And that is a wide open question. If the department is saying to us, yes, because of inadequate funding of the system, we are engaging in tick box exercises, please tell us now so that we know and understand what your challenges are. Chairperson, lastly, it's good to see that there is some system performance, but I would like to share my concern with Honourable Kekana with regards to the artisans and new artisan learners registered nationally per annum. I'm very concerned if we look at it's a two-quarter report, and we have status at the end of the two quarters 7,367, and the annual target is 21,000. So we are far off target. We're about a third. What is the reason for it? How could we turn this around? Also, as far as new artisan learners registered nationally per annum, we are at the half, but will we make the target if it is, or are there challenges that we should be aware of as a portfolio committee at this stage? And then just, Chairperson, I still don't understand why we have the problem with CETA, because we've had some progress on CETA, but is there still some lingering problems? Have they lost their sort of management control over this certificate issue? What is it? Because then we will have to push for another meeting with CETA to come before the committee. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you to the Deputy Minister and the team for the presentation. I just want to check first, what mechanism have the department put in place to ensure that Umalusi completes the review of the National Admission and Promotional Guidelines for NCV policy? And what impact will this review have on articulation of the NCV graduates to higher education institutions? I have noticed that there are two tangible examples, in particular in the Western Cape, but obviously these will have to be guided well. And mostly, most departments were told that they have been instructed by National Finance to review certain vacancies and do not fill them going forward because of the pressures in the fiscal. I just want to check if the department, with its own status assumptions on what it wants to do on vacant posts, are you one of those departments affected or that have been requested by Treasury to cut down on other vacancies? With all the impressions that I get about what is going on within the department, I am concerned that you need to do more work on your indlela, because if you are to create credibility in the skills trajectory that you are actually interested in and moving the nation forward, in particular the numbers of young people, the quality of your training here speaks a lot. And in fact, all the loopholes that exist, they will have to be filled as quick as possible so as to enable the perception, or what you call the perception environment, not to affect your training environment. You cannot afford to have something that you treat as a priority going forward have an element of underpreparedness.
Thank you, Chair. Firstly, I would like to start by congratulating the department on not incurring irregular expenditure this quarter, and would like to encourage you to continue with this good work in the subsequent quarter, as Honorable Killian has said. On CET, I'm pleased to see that progress has been made in trying to make this program work for us, in fact work for our people. We know that there are nine, that's what we're told, CET centers that, in all the provinces that we have. But DG, I want to recommend that the department develops just one CET center, which will become a model, you know, something which will show us an envisaged CET center. We are saying that they are not adult education centers. They will teach a variety of skills. We want a place where we can go and benchmark even other provinces, where they can go and say, this is what a CET center should look like. This is what one has in mind, that we need to see something that says this is what a CET center looks like. Honorable Mbatha has spoken on the curriculum review. We know that on TVET, we know that some work is being done on the review of the NCV, some work is being done by Umalusi and as well QCTO. But in your slide 12, the department identifies a risk associated with Umalusi processes. And I would like to know what mitigation strategies has the department put in place in order to ensure that Umalusi delivers on the target. Again, Chair, I would like to recommend that the department, Umalusi and QCTO, they all come to present to the committee a detailed report and implementation plan with timelines, because the issue of curriculum review to me is critical. That is all with regards to the NCV program. I would also like to know what will be the impact of the decreased charges on the finances of the sitters and implementation of skills projects, because they have budgeted on the original budget. I don't know whether I'm putting it correctly in terms of financial terms, but we are born now with Bebe Nigwele, and now they are supposed to budget on the one that has been adjusted. On the issue of Indlela, I think everyone is asking about Indlela, all the members. It's because we were not impressed about what we saw during oversight. We need to be honest with that one. We were not impressed about what we saw during oversight, and we want to know what can be done and or what are the plans for the department to make Indlela a place of excellence in trade test assessment. Thank you.
Thank you, honourable members. DG, just before I hand over to yourself, may I echo the sentiments of the members on the aspect of Indlela. I think instead of saying to us that you are not meeting the target, we think out of our oversight experience, the department maybe would want to reflect and give the committee a report on progress that are being made to bring the institution to what its mandate is supposed to be. You will see in our report that we are bringing on the oversight that we've done at Ndlela, that you're going to come the next quarter, you're going to tell us the same thing. And that's simply because of what we have observed when we were there. And there's a number of things that are not in place. They complain about CETA that is not assisting them and charging them a high cost to install. Now that's fine to complain about that, but what is not fine is to allow the corrupt practices to continue, both in relation to their financing and the certificates and all of that. There's a long list of very many other things that we have observed there that relates to the target that you need to have in relation to the skilled artisans that you're not going to be able to reach that target because they've got outdated equipment there. They've got a range of other things that is just not going to bring you to that. So we would want to ask on that one. We're not going to ask you why you're not meeting the target. And we're not going to ask you to come back next time and tell us you're not. We think that maybe a proactive process needs to be undertaken at that institution because of what we have observed. Similarly, so on the CETA landscape, we think that we are getting a report every time of the date being shifted. And again there, you have to walk us through on why do you have to shift the date all the time? Is there not another problem that you are experiencing that are causing you to say to us one quarter after another to shift the date? But more than that, it does have, we can see it's having an impact on the CETAs themselves. Uncertainty is growing, and the ability to produce what they want because there's uncertainty of whatever. Now, a lot of it is human nature. It's not going to be solved by, you know, some of the things that you have to do. But I think we should, because the CETAs are important also, we should minimize the uncertainty that the landscape is bringing about on the life of the CETAs. And rather, again, in this instance, say to us, other than we have met the target or not, rather you have to come and talk to us about separately what does all of this entail, what do we want to achieve with all of this, and do a proper analysis of whether this is the correct path to go. Why should you just leave them alone, or why should you undertake this one? On the skills levy, I want to suggest there is a problem, and I can see what the Treasury is doing here. Estimates is not always a good thing, because estimates means you either have the money in your account or you don't. In this instance, you don't have the money in the account. So the question that the members are asking is, there's nothing there. But rather what we should fix in relation to the skills levy is the uncertainty in the legislation. We want to ask that, and we said this to your legal person when he came, we want the legislation to be fixed, because there's a big group within this, there's a big group called government and all its institutions who have the luxury to choose, because simply the legislation does not compel them sufficiently to do so. Now, government as the leader of society must project an image of, we will lead society in relation to making sure that our skills development implementation plan is there. So we think that the money that you are waiting for, you're not going to get, because the law does not compel them to do so. You saw in the Western Cape, they took the first gap and they said, we will not pay. Now, we think that that's a big problem that needs to be fixed. To the members of the audit, we can't ask them to come here and not give them anything. We think that the last slide that is in the report is the one that the committee was extremely concerned about when the Auditor General appeared before them. And that is, if you can explain to us what the difficulty on your side and on the side of the Auditor General, instead of repeating to us on recurring problems for the entire sector. And other than telling us that you are looking at it, it's getting worse here now. Other than saying you are looking at it, I think if you can walk us through what exactly is it that you are putting in place, especially around the repeat findings that has been there for quite a long time, that have been pointed out, and that we don't seem to be able to get any conclusion on. DG, lastly, we must thank you for the report that you have brought before us. It will help maybe in your concluding remarks to walk the committee through and tell us, having achieved a number of the targets that you have set, what does that mean? What does that mean for the department? We hope that it will obviously assist the department to move forward on the decisions that you have taken that you must implement. What would be the likely challenges that would go with that? But not only the likely challenge, where does it take the sector to? Because I don't think we'd want to talk about the challenges only. How does this take the sector? Does it give us a quantum leap in the sector? having achieved the things that we have. Over to you, DJ, and the team.
Thank you very much, Chair. It's quite a number of issues that are raised. Others are more strategic, others systemic, others operational. But we'll try our level best to clarify the issues as raised by the Honourable Member. I think firstly, perhaps as a point of departure, the report on the performance and expenditure review done by the National Treasury took into account quite a number of variables in the process of them developing that report. One area I think we needed to acknowledge was that the cohort study data is not available in the department in so far as the operations of the TVET colleges are at the present moment. So the National Treasury, what they did there, they worked on the basis of the existing national data, which is not taking into consideration the cohort studies throughout the system, and also 12 colleges who were participating in it. That's how they've arrived to the conclusion that they've put up. You would acknowledge that in the sector, different studies come to different outcomes. Although, of course, throughout the indication is that throughput in the TVET policy is not what it's supposed to be, but it's not the same. In others, you find that there is a lot more improvement than what has been reported from another study. Now, one another issue I think we've been raising at a systemic level, quite repeated, especially to this portfolio committee, is that the Department of Higher Education itself is underfunded and understaffed to significantly be able to revitalize a historically neglected system. I think it's an aspect that we should not lose sight of at every given moment when we are engaging and interrogating this particular matter that is of TVET policy. Now, coupled with quite a number of variables, I think we could be able to talk to, when we afforded time to actually talk to this issue or to come and present on it, what are the systemic issues that are actually confronting the system. Because one of them, which I think perhaps we should not ignore in respect to this throughput, it's a low fundamental learning competency in the system of education in respect to students who are entering the TVET college sector, you know, at the present moment. And we live with that well into the future. And one of the things that we said with the portfolio committee in the previous year. It may not be this one. It is the question of teaching and learning, which is hampered in the main by poorly and underqualified staff in the TVET college sector. And at that time, we indicated, we shared with this committee that one of the studies that were conducted by Human Sciences Research Council was actually showing that only about 53% of lecturers in the TVET college sector who have a method in teaching or in lecture. Put aside other things, and you couple that with how then the subject, the lesson delivered in the classroom. So it's a whole lot and a combination of various things that we are dealing with in this respect, of which we can't shy our responsibility away from them. But I think that context is always important to bear in mind when one engages in this area. Now, in respect to the review of NCV, as well as the development of occupational programs by UCTO, one of the risks to mitigate, one of the things that we are doing to mitigate the risks that are there, we're engaging with Umalusi quite consistently, and they are briefing us about the progress which is being made and what support they need from us as well as from the system and other relevant institutions. We are working together in that, as well as with UCTO in the process of developing this occupational program. So we think in respect to slide 12, as members have actually raised this issue quite repeatedly, there are measures that were put in place through engagement as well as giving the necessary support to unblock the blockages that we pick up in the process of this review. Now, it's coming up quite frequently, the question of Indela. You know, our operations at Indela, some are not funded at all. We are funding them from National Skills Fund. The entire operation in some areas. Of course, we are working at the process of recapitalizing Indela, you know, at the present moment. And I think we take quite seriously the instruction that the committee is giving us in terms of perhaps having dedicated reports in respect to the operations of Indela. In 2010, we conducted a forensic investigation there that revealed quite a lot of anomalies and corrupt practices. And actions were taken. I can't still remember as to whether in that process we lost about 16 officials in there, but it was quite a lot. And there are quite a number of other measures that we had to work on. May not be perfect, you know, now, but also as a result of underfunding, amongst other things. But we're continuously working on this area. Maybe Mvalo can elaborate later in the other area in respect to the capacity in the operation of the department. One another thing we want to emphasize here is that the shortfall in funding in respect to delivery program areas in the department has actually affected, or it is actually worse in respect to support programs. For instance, in respect to the administration insofar as monitoring, evaluation, and implementation is concerned. So the question of HR in the overall is grossly affected by that. You'd remember that we're working on the staff complement of up to 1,200 in the department. Now, we are servicing 38,000 staff members with the same staff complement that we had before the transfer of TVET function as well as CET function. And it's quite neat. In as much as there are areas of incapacity in respect of one body, but our situation got exacerbated by the number that jumped from 1,200 to 38,000 staff members that we need to serve. I think that needs to be taken into consideration. We are not complaining, we are working, trying hard into ensuring that there are no slippages, but it's not that that is. So the question of building capacity within the department requires funds that are not there at the present moment. So we have to work with what we have. In some areas, we do resort into using service providers to assist us in addressing that particular blockage or overload, and then we dispense that situation, we carry on. So some of the things ideally we could be doing, we are not able to do as a result of this question of funding, amongst other things. Let me ask Dr. Mashawa to come in with respect to community education and training policy. There are a couple of questions in there.
Sorry, Deji, just before you do, honorable members, we've been negotiating. They stopped and then they aggressively started again next door. They're even there at that door now. What we've been able to establish is we've asked the parliament people to talk to them, and they are having an attitude. And the other suggestion is, the secretary said that he's been able to establish that the old assembly chamber is empty at the moment. So we have a choice of enduring this noise or move to the old assembly chamber, except the DG is busy answering already. So choice is up to you.
Chairperson, it is very annoying and it's very difficult. But the problem is that the Joint Rules Committee will be meeting in the Old Assembly Chamber at 11:30, which is 20 minutes from now. So it's not going to make any sense to move. We will have to work through this and just have to inform the authorities at Parliament that please, it's impossible to work under these circumstances. They cannot allocate venues to us which are really not conducive for engaging in a proper manner and for doing our oversight. Thank you, Chairperson.
Yeah, Chair, no, I think we should continue. At least, Daram, we can hear what you say there. It's just that in the background there's an irritation. I mean, some of us, 12 o'clock, I must go and see the doctor. Even if we were to walk to all assembly, it will still take some time. So let's continue, and we'll have to live with this noise.
Now, if that's the view, honorable members, DJ?
Oh, thank you very much.
Can we just make sure that you raise your voice?
Yeah, no, thanks.
And everyone else.
No, thank you very much. We live with that situation. Maybe they are preparing them for three tests at Indela. Yeah, Dr. Mato.
Thanks, TV. Thanks, Chair. Can I just address the issue relating to community colleges? First, I must welcome the idea, the recommendation that at least we must have at least one model community college to which we can then refer people. That is what we mean by a community college as conceptualized. That is accepted. We have no argument against it. And the second thing is that part of the reason why we have not achieved that which we wanted to achieve. First, we have been establishing councils who are going to play oversight over these community colleges. And now we are putting in the management of each, both the principals and deputy principals, and who are then going to be responsible for actually implementing the concept of a community college as we have envisaged it. Lastly, we really do have reason to believe that the ideal community college can thrive in the context of the schooling system where centers are at the moment. And therefore, we have taken a position that we would rather deal with this in the form of partnership with other stakeholders like the NGOs, the faith-based organization, and so on. And I think last week, we launched in Soweto at the Don Bosco Education Project what we really consider to be pretty close to what we want to do, in terms of a concept of general education, a concept of skills development in the context of part qualifications but which are artisan orientated, and in the context of non-formal programs which are meant for communities in the context of HIV, AIDS and all those things. I also do understand that some of the issues raised by Honorable Member Mkun might have arisen out of her encounters during the oversight in Soweto. And the fact that where we have placed the administrative centers, is not located at where the actual centers operate. And as a result, we have an issue of visibility, which we have reason to believe that we are going to eliminate now that at least out of the 9 principals, I think about 4 have already been substantively appointed, and who are then going to take the project forward. But it's a this sector is not going to thrive without partnership. The project we launched recently has got to do with 3 sitters involved, the NSF, as well as the fiscus. You can only survive like that if we want to go the route that we want to go. And those are the issues I just wanted to raise with regard to community colleges.
Mr. Patel?
Good morning, Honourable Members and Chairperson. The DG did cover some of the questions, but I just would want to add that in regards to the GTEC report, we definitely agree with many of the findings, and those recommendations will have to be taken forward, particularly the 3 around ensuring that we improve the low throughput rate. Number 2, in terms of bridging of foundation programs, and number 3, in terms of improving data. But also throughput, there was a proposal that we must seriously look at performance-based funding to incentivize good performance. Secondly, in regards to the TVET audit outcomes, that the TVET colleges, 10 had adverse findings, out of the 30 as indicated that the AG had conducted, the results are somewhat mixed. However, what it is pointing to is that the private sector auditing that was used by these colleges were not as effective and thorough as the AG's standards that are being applied. And when we talk of all the plans and policies in our APP, those plans and policies are particularly around ensuring that we create a much more robust regulatory environment. So for example, in regards to the audit, the Director General had sent a circular to council indicating to them that the remuneration of council members must be as prescribed through the PFMA. And a number of councils have questioned the legal authority of the Director General in regards to him providing a directive in that particular regard. So the issue is also we have to really relook at the main purpose of the council functions of colleges and whether we have a too much of a hands-off approach to them. I think that's the issue of whether we have, remembering that normally a council is there when the majority of funds are collected by the council itself as a third stream income. Now with the migration, almost 70% of the income, 70 to 80% is state income. So there is a need for closer accountability. Then on the issue of the problem with the state IT agency, I think the state IT agency did a wonderful job in trying to deal with the backlogs because Chairperson, it was highlighted that the portfolio committee took a particular interest. But yes, there has been a losing of ways because while focusing on the certification problem, other problems of a very old legacy system has begun to emerge. So as the GTEC report, expenditure report also rightly indicates, we aren't able to accumulate data from the system and therefore that impacts on our analysis for throughput. However, we are dealing with it. I am going to be meeting the CETA senior management and if needs be bring the Director General in. At the moment we're dealing with it at that particular level. The question on the percentage spent on moderators and examiners, that is not the last of the expenditure. So the question was whether that is a complete expenditure for a year, and the answer is no. There are other cycles in this financial year, so the over expenditure percentage may increase. But I think we have to remember that this is not based, this is based on the underfunding of the sector. This is not a new problem. It has been there for the last 3 or 4 years. But the department within the prescripts of the PFMA has been able to deal with its over expenditure in previous years where other funds were moved. But perhaps the CFO, etc. may want to add if I'm venturing too much into financial issues. Honourable Mbata's question on Umalusi, but also Honourable Mkunu around the curriculum issue. That's just a caution. The deliverable is due on the 31st of March. What we're indicating to Umalusi is that we want it, that target date is our target date, not theirs, and therefore we want the review to be finalized so that it can go out for public comment. There is just one more question. I think I answered the one on curriculum. Thank you very much.
Here, I think a lot of cross-cutting questions in respect to finances, auditing. Maybe the chair of the audit committee may want to chip in as well. I don't know. Yeah.
DG, Chairperson, Honourable Members. Let me start with the issue around the reduction of the levy collections. Just to clarify that matter, the skills levy collection projections, as is reflected in the budget, is based on projections between National Treasury and SARS, and the department has no responsibility over that. So we receive those amounts as allocations from National Treasury, and we are obliged in terms of the BSNI and the Appropriations Act to include it as such in our budget, specifically because it's a direct charge. Now, what Treasury is doing with SARS is, as the year progresses, they do adjusted collection estimates, and during the adjusted estimates they correct those amounts. Yes, indeed, it is a crisis, especially for the CETAS and the NSF. I think this year has the biggest impact so far since the department took over the skills levy in 2010. It is more than 12%. We are in negotiations with National Treasury to determine the exact CETAS that will be impacted upon, because it's not across the board, just a general adjustment. It specifically applies to specific sectors. We will get all the data from the National Treasury so that those specific CETAS that's affected can adjust their targets in this year, because it will have an impact on them. In terms of the definition of household, that is in terms of the Standard Chartered Accounts that's regulated by National Treasury, and the household refers to pension benefit payments to staff that retires. So a very unfortunate classification wording, but that is what it is for staff that retired, the pension payouts that went to those staff members. Then in terms of the transfers to the universities and the NSF, also in terms of the fee increase adjustments as well as the student debt, all those were included in the normal subsidies of the universities as well as of NSF, and according to the payment schedules being transferred to them. So there's been no lack on the side of the department of the transfers of those subsidies to the universities and to NIST funds. I also just want to add slightly to Mr. Patel's comments on the examiners and moderators. Indeed, the payment to examiners and moderators has been a crisis even in the old Department of Education. The baseline for examination services are much less than what we require within the system. The situation has been worsened over the past 2 to 3 years with the increased enrollment, specifically in TVET colleges. And the examination costs obviously have a direct impact on, if you increase your enrollments, you immediately have a kick-off effect on the examination services, because you have to do more exams. There are more papers to be written, so you've got an increased capacity in terms of examiners and moderators. Over the past 2 years, specifically the National Skills Fund assisted to come to the rescue of the department to assist with some of the overspending, and as indicated by Mr. Patel, quite a large portion of the overspending also came from other savings within the department, where we shifted funds so that we can support the spending on examiners and moderators. We will ensure once again this year that we do not overspend as a result of that. So the program in itself will be saved. We will not have an unauthorized spending there, so it will also be for the vote. Chair, I think those were the critical areas. There's one additional question which I would please request, Chairperson, if possible, if the committee can give us physical evidence and maybe a written request. And that is the outsourcing of services I think it was specifically mentioned, site and SABC or something like that. If we can have the question in writing and the actual detail around that, because I'm not aware of the situation that was explained in the question, so that we can provide the committee with a written response, if that would be possible, please, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair. DG, Chairperson of the Audit Committee.
Thank you, Chairperson, honourable members. Thank you for the invitation. From an audit committee perspective, and as the chair has indicated, maybe just a quick background before the roof falls on our heads. The DG has alluded to this, and members should understand the effect that the function shift has had on this department. Colleagues, we received an unqualified audit opinion for this department, but I can guarantee you it was an above human effort that resulted in that. It was really, I think Mrs. Mbobo and some of her staff, we had to put them on a drip with Red Bull to try and get all the HR issues resolved. And that has a cumulative effect on a number of issues as well. From the findings, if you analyze the findings, and especially the repeat findings, Chair, a number of them came from performance information. That is something that we've paid a lot of attention to. We've requested from the audit committee side the implementation of an electronic system to manage the generation, the collation, and the reporting of the performance information. That has resulted in three of the four programs this year that were audited by the AG having unqualified audit reports on their performance information. TVET is still a problem for us. There are a number of the repeat findings that you see here comes from this. In our previous audit committee, a presentation was made. As you are aware, there is a problem with reliance on the figures that come from the colleges in terms of enrollment, etc. So we are looking at this from the audit committee in detail. We hope that, and we will monitor the implementation of the TVET MIS system, and we will discuss with the Auditor General the reliance that they will be placing on this. So we aim to, close to the end of January, to have a special audit committee meeting just to discuss the performance information from our TVET to assist that we can also get an unqualified opinion on that performance information. So that is one thing that we will definitely be doing. In terms of the repeat findings, some of these resulted in terms of, well, because of capacity constraints, finance was really undercapacitated, Chair. We did get additional capacity, but it was very late in the financial year, and we will and hope we will see improvement going forward. In terms of the accruals, the problems that we had with the accruals, the contingent liabilities, etc. These things that it takes capacity to go and analyze these figures, but we will keep on monitoring this from the audit committee perspective. Sometimes, if you take an action plan on the findings, Chair, management puts something in place, but then you get to the end of the year and the AG says, but I still don't agree. So in my discussion with the AG after the audit, I specifically requested them to meet with each branch, to sit with every finding. And management says, I'm going to do this to resolve it. That we then get agreement already there with the Auditor General, that if we put this in place, and it works, of course, then would it resolve the issue? So we will monitor that process then as well. We will get a revised action plan very soon from management on this issue. I think the last area that we also will look at, and my colleagues from internal audit that is here, quite a number of hours have been set aside in the audit plan for this year to review. First of all, the performance information is reviewed quarterly, and we will get the report very soon on that as well. But then also a lot of time has been put aside to audit progress against the Auditor General's findings. Because the arrangement from the Audit Committee now going forward is that it doesn't turn green in our language as resolved until internal audit has indicated that they are satisfied with this. So there are many measures that we are putting in place that we will keep on monitoring this. I must say the DG's door is always open if we find anything, and it just takes one email to his office and it is dealt with. We will also focus a lot on consequence management. It is something that the AG has brought in, you would have seen in many government departments, that where there are repeat findings, that it forms part of the performance of individuals. If that answers your question, Chair.
Mr. Mpop, if there is any.
Thank you, Chairperson Deputy. The DG covered the question of the capacity in human resource management. What I would like to add is that through the function shift processes, we were given about 48 posts, 20 of which went to the registry services, because we have now a big personnel registry in the department that we are also managing for all the 38,000 employees. So we only got about 28 to HR administration. A benchmark exercise was conducted last year, and the findings of the exercise was that we needed an additional of 350 posts between finance and HR in order to manage the function shift process. And we only got less than 100 posts that were shared across all the areas that are affected by function shift. Thank you, DG.
Thanks very much, DG, Chairperson, honorable members, as well as. Thanks very much. Thank you. I must say, DJ just mentioned the National Artisan Development Strategy Workshop that is going to be held in December. What we have done, that was last year, we published what you refer to as a trade test pass rate and quality improvement strategy. Upon receiving inputs from the public, they directed us that we need to rather work on a comprehensive national artisan development strategy. Hence, therefore, that we're having this conference forthcoming, and we have been consulting in all provinces. And I must say I'm happy, especially with the role that has been played in this process by the private sector. I must also mention that if you read the report of the National Treasury on expenditure reviews on artisan development, in their conclusion, they are using some affirmative words in saying overwhelmingly the study is supporting that if we are going to ratchet artisan development in the country, especially towards 20,000 targets, we need to have funding arising from the fiscal, not only on skills development levy system, if as a country we are really serious, and DG has made this point earlier. I'm just going to deal with another two areas that I think are very important, especially with regard to our targets. It's an area on trade test pass rate. You will recall that we only meet in the main a person who is coming for a trade test on the day of the trade test. And about 25 to 30% of people whom are doing trade testing are people who are not coming from the apprenticeship system, meaning we say for that structured system.
whereupon they are well prepared, both in terms of knowledge as well as practical. But then these are the people who are coming and saying they do have their workplace experience and therefore they require trade testing. So that is the area significantly that we find, you know, difficult for them to get through. But then of course we are not stopping there. We advertised last year as well artisan recognition of prior learning regulations. In these regulations, what we are going to do now, before someone is trade tested, that person will first undergo what we refer to as a pre-trade testing, so that at that level we can be able to identify if there are any gaps, so that we do not proceed this person to trade testing. So that is going to assist us a great deal. And I must mention that at Indela currently, to address this anomaly, we are working, in fact we have finished already the workshop for boiler making. That workshop is 100% finished and is well equipped on new equipment. We are going to use it in terms of our artisan recognition of prior learning, and we know in the country boiler making is one of those trades that are trending or are in demand. Another one that is at 30% currently the workshop is on welding, because also welding is a trending trade in the country. We'll be using that one to implement this new arrangement that we are working on. And I must say it's interesting as well, because people are coming to Indela, because Indela is the cheapest trade testing center in the country. In the country we are having 420 accredited trade test centers. Public we do have about more or less 5%. So meaning is therefore in the main the private sector is so heavily involved, and we are really encouraging that. Hence maybe that the artisans that we produced in the year that has ended 31st March 2016, you'll find that they are coming from the private sector. And then of course that's a commitment that was made in the National Skills Court. National Skills Accord is not something new. In closing, the one that is dealing with average time, also we are improving, as you have seen, from 180 to 124. So there is a lot of work that we are doing. We have invested in the employment of our 7 assessors, and we are also discussing in utilizing some of the colleges, especially in Gauteng. We are already to work with the Tshwane South TVET with regard to electronics equipment, mechanician, automotive mechanics, transportation, electrician, and also in the Ruleni West TVET. We are going to be working with it in terms of the memorandum of understanding with regard to those trades on pattern making as well as molding. Others in the province who are going to assist them in terms of accreditation. Because once you accredit them, it means therefore that we'll be able to utilize also our colleges. That is going to assist in terms of addressing average leap. I fully agree therefore, Chairperson, that maybe we'll need a dedicated session just on artisan. We'll be ready for that session to share with you what is happening currently. Thanks very much, Chairperson, honorable members and the colleagues.
Chair, you asked one question that was asked as to whether the National Treasure has stopped us into filling vacant pools or not. I think it's an important question. I may ask the CFO to answer that question, because he knows where the monies are.
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps just on a larger note, I accept that it's part of the action plan of the audit of the portfolio committee to implement certain measures to ensure that nobody sees during meetings, and I think it's quite successful. Chair, then, in terms of the question around the Treasury asked us not to appoint any vacancies, the answer is no. As the Department Treasury acknowledge the limited capacity and are aware of the problems that we experience, however, the baseline that we have is not sufficient to fill all the vacancies that we have within the establishment. Furthermore, across government and in the inclusive department, there has been a baseline reduction on compensation of employees over the 2017 MTF, so the position will not improve. However, I must say that in our case, the baseline reduction is extremely small if we compare it to some other government departments across the national government as a whole. So we are still in a, maybe in a slightly good position, but we were not specifically requested not to fill vacancies. Thank you, Jack.
No, thank you very much, sir. Back to you.
No, I think there was a question on this. It's just a tick box exercise.
Chair, it is the planning in the department is such that we plan first on the means, which are the responsibility of the department, and then again with institution plan on outcomes, which are system targets. Now, if you're operating in an environment which is unregulated, and which does not standardize the nomenclature and the rules of the game between the department and institutions, you cannot be able to play oversight and manage the system. And therefore, the policies, the plans, and the regulations which are put in place enable us to monitor the system better in terms of the system achieving the system targets. I'll give you an example. We have inherited the CET system, which is completely lawless. Now, in order to be able to manage that system, you can't start by jumping into the system. You have to create a framework with which we are going to regulate the system. And therefore, that's where you start. And then thereafter, you implement the frameworks to see whether the system is performing or it is not. And therefore, it is my view that the plans, the regulations, and the policy framework, which might seem like a tick box, they are actually the mechanism which help us. They are taking us a step further to manage and play oversight over the system.
I thought the question was clear on what Honourable Nkadimeng asked. It is really asking you if you are abiding by the Public Finance Management Act prescripts insofar as outsourcing is concerned. That's what the question was. I mean, that was the essence of the question, so I'm not... I don't see the need that she must... that we must write this down and send it to you, because that was the essence of the question.
Oh, we fully abide, Chair.
Yeah. And the other last part of the question was, don't you have people internally instead of outsourcing?
Answer that into saying we only source external capacity where there is a need within the framework of the law, even in that. We are not making extensive use of consultants within the department. It's only when there is a need just to address that particular issue. And over it, things go back to normal.
Honourable members, I take it all your questions have been answered under this dangerous situation. Honourable Bazoli.
Chair, we hear often from this department and from other sources that it's underfunded. Can we get an estimate from you of by how much it is underfunded? What would you need to be a fully effective department, given the function shift and the taking on of the CET colleges and also the underfunding of universities, which is leading to higher and higher fees, the underfunding of TVETs, which is making it difficult to modernize them, the underfunding of skills education, which means you can't actually do what you want to do. What sort of scale of funding are we looking at as being needed in this department and its sub-department? Okay, Kana and Guna, switch on the microphone.
Just a quick follow-up on this very thing of outsourcing, which is connected to the issue that the department in their budget they got an unqualified audit report or view, but they still need, they accept that they need to do, there is still room for improvement. For example, internal controls must be strengthened, and the issue that some DDG funded posts are not filled. Now, if the fund, if the salary to fill a post and we're not doing it, and we can't understand, I don't think we can say in South Africa, there might be scarce skills like engineering, but management in the Department of Higher Education, I think there are many people with PhDs who can fill the post. Why do we still have funded posts like DDGs, which are right at the top and they are very important? Because if you don't have those, there might be a need now and then to outsource. Why do we have those posts not filled if the money is there?
Well, thank you, Chair. Thanks for the responses from the department. Just one follow-up on the CETs. I would like to know progress with regards to the issuing of certificates, because this is one challenge that was mentioned in Gauteng when we did oversight. I think it is something which applies to most of them. Thank you.
To what extent are we underfunded? It's not an easy question. I think the last time we were here, Chair, we spoke quite at length in respect to the extent of underfunding insofar as community education and training colleges are concerned, taking into consideration the need. Perhaps what we could do in terms of the actual figures and the extent, when we come back, we may, if the committee so feels, work out those figures, the category, so that we are able to share them with the portfolio committee. Of course, understanding that that's not a bidding process, but it's the sharing of information in respect to taking into consideration the current enrollment and how it is envisaged going forward. What are the trends in respect to the shortfalls that we're talking about? If that is acceptable to the meeting, of course, I would have those figures from the top of my head now. It's amounting to a couple of billions, as I said. I think when we made a presentation during field four in the appropriations committee, in the National Assembly and NCOP together with the portfolio committee, we indicated at that stage that in respect to NSFAS, in order to be able to fund at least about 25% of the current student population, over the MTF period, what is required is 37 billion. I'm saying because I can recall that that number. And in subsidies, in respect to the system, it was around 19 billion there. And we also spoke about the question of deferred maintenance within the university sector, which is costing, which is at around 25 billion, you know, at the present. Because they are talking about quite a number of the question of student accommodation, teaching, you know, and the development, and a whole range of other things. I think we have a breakdown in respect to that. I'm raising those because I can still be able to recall. But if then the meeting would request that we would be able to. In respect to the post, DDG post that haven't been filled yet, now the processes are underway now for that process, because these are the process are the posts that are filled at an executive level, but there are processes that are afoot at the present moment.
Because
In our engagement on the issue with the regional offices, we asked each regional office to collect data to determine how many students are affected by the outstanding certificate, to give us the details of the students, so that when we present the data to our examination section, to CETA, we present data which doesn't say there are outstanding certificates, but there are names and ID details of each student whose certificate is outstanding. Basically, the reason which has been proffered has been that, same as TVET, and if you do the GTC over 3 years, and CETA has no ability to combine those results and issue the certificate. But we need to determine that when we give CETA the details of the students. And we probably might be able to report later to the portfolio committee as to what progress has been made then after that engagement with the examination sections in provinces, our regional offices, and then the CETA itself.
Thank you very much, DG and your team. Absentia, the deputy minister that was here, but also honourable members, you would agree with me that the health and safety rules of the country does not allow us to continue the meeting any further. So as much as we want to do the minutes, there are two problems. The one is we are under a severe threat here of anything collapsing on us any further, but secondly, there's no quorum to do the minutes now. And I would suggest that we thank, with your permission, we thank everyone. We thank the department again for their presentation and the responses thereof. And if there isn't anything else, honourable members, then I ask that I thank you also, and that the meeting comes to an end. And we move out here to safety.
missing here?
Yeah.